जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Vrajika Kishara Siddhara Sri Shimna's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Gijaya ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Gijaya Srimad Bhagavad Gita Kijaya Samaveda Bhaktivinda Kijaya Gaur Premananda All glories to Simla devotees All glories to Simla devotees All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Garanga Dibo Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Kastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasudim Gauravani Bichani Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskachari Sitarani Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Welcome, everybody. We are reading today from the Bhagavad Gita, a fairly familiar verse to many of you. This is chapter 15, verse 7. I'll just read it through. It's kind of a long purport. Going through. Mamayavangsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manakshastandriyanjani prakritishtani karshati. Actually, I'll read the word for word, too. Mama, my, eva, certainly, amsha, fragmental particle, jivaloke, in the world of conditional life, jivabhuta, the conditioned living entity, sanatana, eternal, mana, with the mind, shashtani, the six, indriyani, senses, prakriti, in material nature, stani, situated, karshati, is struggling hard. Now, there's significant words here that you'll see as we go through the purport that Srila Prabhupada put special emphasis on. One is this word angsa, which means fragmental part. And another one is sanatan, which means eternal. Then we have shishtani and driyani, the six senses, including the mind, five senses in the mind. And finally, karshati, which means struggling very hard. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada's purport. I'll read it all the way through up until I'll probably not read the last paragraph. It's quite long, but it's a wonderful purport, and so many points of philosophy are explained by Srila Prabhupada in this. In this verse, the identity of the living being is clearly given. The living entity is the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Did I read the verse? No. Okay. Let's read the verse. Translation. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal, fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Report. In this verse, the identity of the living being is clearly given. The living entity is the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, eternally. It is not that he assumes the individuality in his conditional life, and in his liberated state becomes one with the Supreme Lord. He is eternally fragmented. Is clearly stated sanatana. According to Vedic version, the Supreme Lord manifests and expands himself in innumerable expansions, of which the primary expansions are called Vishnu Tattva, and the secondary expansions are called the living entities. In other words, the Vishnu Tattva is the personal expansion, and the living entities are the separated expansions. By his personal expansion, he is manifested in various forms like Lord Rama, Nrsingadev, Vishnumurti, and all the predominating deities of the Vaikuntha planets. The separated expansions, the living entities, are eternally servitors. The personal expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the individual identities of Godhead, are always present. Similarly, the separated expansions of living entities have their identities. As fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, the living entities also have fragmental portions of his qualities, of which independence is one. Every living entity, as an individual soul, has his personal individuality and a minute form of independence. This next sentence is very important. By misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul, and by proper use of independence, he is always liberated. In either case, he is qualitatively eternal, as the Supreme Lord is. In his liberated state, he is free from this material condition, and he's under the engagement of transcendental service unto the Lord. In his conditioned life, he is dominated by the material modes of nature and forgets transcendental loving service of the Lord. As a result, he has to struggle very hard to maintain his existence in this material world. The living entity is not only human beings, the cats, dogs, even great controllers of the material world. Brahma, Lord Shiva, and even Vishnu are all part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. They are all eternal, not temporary manifestations. The word karshati, struggling or grappling hard, is very significant. The conditioned soul is bound up as though shackled by iron chains. He is bound up by the false ego, and the mind is the chief agent which is driving him in this material existence. When the mind is in the mode of goodness, his activities are good. When the mind is in the mode of passion, his activities are troublesome. And when the mind is in the mode of ignorance, he travels in the lower species of life. It is clear, however, in this verse that the conditioned soul is covered by the material body with the mind and the senses, and when he is liberated, this material covering perishes, but his spiritual body manifests itself in its individual capacity. The following information is there in the Madhya Indriyana Shruti, Savai Esha Brahmanishta Idam Shriram Marcham Asitraja Brahma Visham Padya Brahmana Pashati Brahmana Shrinoti Brahmanai Vedam Sarvam Anubhavati. It is stated here that when a living entity gives up his material embodiment and enters into the spiritual world, he revives his spiritual body, and in his spiritual body he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He can hear and speak to him face to face, and he can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is. From Smriti also is understood, Vasanti Yatra Purusha Sarve Vaikuntha Murtaya. In the spiritual planets, everyone lives in bodies featured like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As far as bodily construction is concerned, there is no difference between the part and parcel living entity and the expansions of Vishnumurti. In other words, at liberation, the living entity gets a spiritual body by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I'll end at that point. Om Gyanatam Randasha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Limitamina Tasma Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa Tiruvischa Kripa Sindhu Bebacha Patitano Pavanibhyo Vaishnabhyo Namo Namaha. So one of the first points that Srila Prabhupada is making this purport as he explains this verse is that we are all eternal parts of Krishna. We are all angsa, fragmental parts, and we are fragmentally a part and parcel of Krishna sanatana, or eternally. Which means that we have similar qualities to Krishna. We are the tiny parts, but of course we differ quantitatively. Srila Prabhupada has given many examples or analogies to understand this, such as if you take the ocean and you take a handful of water out of that ocean and you analyze the chemical composition and the salinity and everything, you'll see that the water in your palm of your hand of that ocean is the same as the ocean. But can you say, I have the ocean in my hand? No, because the ocean is very vast and great, and I have a very small amount of water in the palm of my hand. Same in quality, but very different in quantity. So this is the position of the individual living entities of us, the jiva soul, in this material world, and of course eternally. Srila Prabhupada explained this in a purport to Bhagavatam 9.24.58. He said, all the living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and are as good as the Lord qualitatively, but quantitatively there is a great difference between them. For the Lord is unlimited, whereas the living entities are limited. Thus the Lord possesses unlimited potency for pleasure, and the living entities have a limited pleasure potency. So, we see this difference between the living entities and the Supreme Lord. Of course, some people say, well, yes, that's temporary. That's because we're in these material bodies and material world, but after liberation, then we're all one, and I'll have all the same qualities as the Supreme Lord. But this is fantasy. is actually not the fact, and it's not supported by our scriptures. Because this is described that this fragmental part and parcel, the living entity, that situation is sanatana, it is eternal. In fact, this is the very, very first teachings of Krishna in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The very first thing he says to Arjuna was, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. In other words, the eternal identity of the living entity as part and parcel of Krishna is substantiated from the beginning to the end of the Bhagavad Gita. We are these individual spirit souls, part of Krishna. And this basic construction is taught throughout the scripture. The very essence of spiritual life, the very essence of understanding, self-realization, is to understand, who am I in relationship with God? What is my position? We have the famous teachings of Lord Chaitanya, who enunciated these principles. In the Majjhalila, when Sanatana Goswami comes to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and speaks to him for the first time, Sanatana Goswami, who was vastly educated, extremely qualified, spoke several languages, minister to the ruling Shah, or Nawab, he said, I am considered a learned man, but I do not even know what is my purpose. He says, I do not know who I am. He says, so who am I and why am I suffering? Of course, Sanatana Goswami very well knew the answers to these questions, but this gave the opportunity for Lord Chaitanya to speak. And Lord Chaitanya begins his instruction, and the very first thing he explains is this critical principle, which we call Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. How the living entity is simultaneously, inconceivably, both one and different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he begins his instructions, Jivara Sarupaya Krishnara Nityadas Krishnara Tatashta Shakti Bheda Bheda Prakash. It is the living entity's constitutional position to be an eternal servant of Krishna, because he is the marginal energy of Krishna and a manifestation simultaneously one with and different from the Lord, like a molecular particle of sunshine or fire. Krishna has three varieties of energies. So that's quite a packed instruction in one verse by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about this identity of us as living entities, as Tatashta Shakti, the marginal energy of the Lord. So he describes those three energies, and then he explains the concept in, this is Majjha 20, 108 up to 117, says, forgetting Krishna, the living entity has been attracted by the external feature from time immemorial. Therefore, the illusory energy Maya gives him all kinds of misery in his material existence, samsara dukkha. So again, we see that not only is the fragmental part and parcel of Krishna eternally there, but when we are in this material energy, this material atmosphere, again, the idea that we are struggling. It says the illusory energy gives him all kinds of miseries in this material existence because we are now separated from our eternal position as servitor of Krishna. The problem with this material world is that it is very inviting and is very illusory and it seems very real, because everything that we experience in this material world is a reflection of what is there in the spiritual world. A few verses early in this 15th chapter, Krishna begins by describing this material world as a banyan tree. So 15, 1, 2, 3, that's the beginning of this chapter. The banyan tree of material existence. The banyan tree has its roots upwards, its branches downward. And Prabhupada explains that this can be seen as a tree is reflected in water, how everything is opposite. What looks like is down, is up, etc. And then, of course, the analogy or metaphor of the banyan tree goes on to describe so many things, the roots, the branches, and everything, which are very entangling this material world. But the main idea is this idea of a reflection. One cannot see the reality. It looks like reality, but it's not. Everything looks like it is here to enjoy. Everything looks like it should be nice, but it doesn't work out that way for us. The Bhagavad Gita in 3:27 says, "The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature." So even when we try to act in this material world, often it is not us, it is not the soul that is acting independently, but is acting under the influence of the modes of nature. And thus we experience this karshati, the struggle for existence in this material world. Living entities are certainly struggling in this material world. We can see it every day in the news, newspaper. Most people don't read the newspapers anymore, but you see it on your internet pages, whatever. The mudslides in California. You're sitting there in your beautiful house, minding your own business, not doing anything, and all of a sudden this huge avalanche of mud comes down and kills 20 people and destroys homes. This is the struggle for existence in the material world. But the living entities are struggling there in so many ways, not just human beings, but in every species of life, down to the aquatics, fish, animals, reptiles, microbes, etc. Because the living entities are found everywhere in this universe. Bhagavad Gita 2:24 describes the living entity as sarvagata, all-pervading. And Prabhupada explains in his purport that the word sarvagata, or all-pervading, is significant because there is no doubt the living entities are all over God's creation. They live on the land, in the water, in the air, within the earth, and even within fire. And Prabhupada explains they're living entities within the sun planet. Now, some people who are not so familiar with this literature might say, yeah, now what are they? They're telling us that they're living entities living in the sun. You know, is this something fanciful? Is this something hard to believe? It's actually not at all hard to believe. If we see just what our material scientists have discovered about where living entities are existing, it's quite remarkable. Did you know that in Antarctica, I want to give you a little bit of information that you can really use practically in your everyday life, right, in these classes? So in Antarctica, you should understand there are 400 different species of lichen and 100 species of moss. Isn't that interesting? Living in the frozen ice of Antarctica. And if you go down to the deepest trenches at the bottom of the ocean, 5 miles deep, you know what the pressure there is? It's thousands of times greater than the surface. Like a submarine, before it even got halfway down, would just be crushed to pieces, right? I mean, it's like the pressure is incredible. 5 miles down, 25,000 feet. There are fish down there. And other living entities that they've discovered, they've found. There's all these different life forms that are in this incredibly inhospitable place. They also found these small nematodes, these little worms, a mile underground, below the surface of the earth, where there's almost no oxygen and it's incredibly hot, very, very high heat. Think, how could a living entity live? But they do. So they survive. Living entities can survive being boiled, frozen, crushed, blasted into space, so many things. And the living entities are still all pervasive, and they find ways to survive in any condition. It's quite remarkable, the persistence of the living entity struggling within this material world. So we can understand why there is this strong survival instinct. It is because we are eternal. We are meant to survive in any situation. We are not meant to perish because the pure spirit soul is eternal and lives forever in the spiritual world. Now, unfortunately, covered by the illusion of this material world, the three modes of material nature, we are thinking that that which is eternal is not the soul, but the body. And therefore, we struggle so hard to preserve this body in any situation of life, not understanding that the real eternality is with the soul in relationship with God. So even though the struggle is going on, there is also another struggle, and that is the struggle as described in this verse. What was it? Shishtani Indriyani, with the senses and the mind. So that struggle is there, the desire to always enjoy somehow in this material life. Despite the hardships, despite the difficulties, despite the hurricanes, typhoons, floods, freezing weather that we're having in Florida, somehow we always try to find some situation to enjoy. So now I'm going to tell you a story that I experienced 2 weeks ago. It's called the Red Tide. Been heard of the Red Tide? You have, Mother Mookie. You used to live down in Sarasota in that area. So the Red Tide is a phenomenon primarily in the Gulf of Mexico and southwest Florida. And the Red Tide is this bloom of algae. Now, here's what happened. My family had a little reunion, my brothers and their families, and they all want to get together, and they want to come down to Florida. So we all go down to Montecito Key, which is this big resort area south of Sarasota. And, of course, it's a beautiful place and beautiful beaches, and everybody's down there. And, of course, it's a little cold, as we remember, around New Year's time. But this wasn't too bad of a day. It's in the low 70s. And so we all go out to the beach, and it's beautiful, clear, you know, doesn't seem like any pollution, anything. And everyone starts coughing and choking. And I had it really bad. I was just coughing and choking. Finally, somebody told us what this was. It was the Red Tide. What happens is this algae bloom produces what's called brevetoxins. These extremely toxic particles are released when the algae is there in the surf of the ocean. Of course, there's millions of fish killed. When the fish eat this, contaminated, this poisonous algae, they become killed. Completely shocks their whole nervous system. And so the fish and all the aquatics are killed. Now, it doesn't kill, and then it gets released in the air. And so here, everybody is thinking they're going to enjoy this wonderful beach experience. And, you know, finally, I mean, I don't know what others did, but I just stayed inside for 2 days. You know, you didn't want to go out and get, you know, where you're choking and hacking like that. So why am I telling this story? Because I think the Red Tide is a wonderful metaphor for material life. Because it looks so nice. The Red Tide is colorless, odorless. You can't tell it's there, but it's choking you. Just like this material energy, it looks nice. It has many of the attributes of the spiritual world. Human beings have many of the attributes of those residents of the spiritual planets. But it's not the same. Because the material energy is always contaminated. It is always causing us difficulty. And whatever our attempts to enjoy are thwarted. Just like there was no way that we could go out and enjoy the beach with the Red Tide. Ultimately, if one can survive all the other natural disasters, the difficulty that human beings cause one another, the wars, the strife, the difficulty, all of that, ultimately we face birth, death, disease, and old age, the four miseries of material existence. So that's with us. So it all looks nice, but ultimately it chokes us to death. And why is this? Why is there suffering? Does there have to be suffering? No. We impose the suffering upon ourselves because the suffering comes because of our forgetfulness of God, our forgetfulness of Krishna, and our loving relationship with Him. And identifying with the material body and the material senses causes us to experience all of the suffering that is inherent within having a material body. It comes with the territory. If we're in this material world, we have a material body, there's going to be suffering. We really can't avoid it. So we falsely identify with the body, the senses, and therefore we're identifying with the pain and pleasure that comes with those body and senses. And then we act on the desire of those bodies and senses, the mind and intelligence, and that further implicates us in an increasing cycle of action and reaction of karma and rebirth from one lifetime to another. This is called samsara, the cycle of birth and death, which we can barely escape. The Srimad Bhagavatam 8.5.30 says, no one can overcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead's illusory energy, Maya, which is so strong that it bewilders everyone, making one lose the sense to understand the aim of life. So not only do we become bewildered, but we totally forget what is the aim of life. And then Prabhupada has a very, very nice comment in his purport to that verse, says, the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives all conditioned souls what appears to be an opportunity to be happy within this material world. But that is Maya. In other words, it is a dream never to be fulfilled. So we have this dream of enjoyment in the material world. It's never fulfilled because it is not our rightful place. It's just like out in the ocean, there's all the fish and the aquatics and even porpoises and whales and all of that. And they're perfectly happy in the water. If you take them out of the water, they'll die. You know, if a whale or something gets beached up on, the, you know, comes up on the beach and can't get back in the ocean, they'll die. Because it's not their rightful place. Similarly, we are perfectly happy on the land, but you throw us out in the middle of the ocean, we're not going to live very long in that atmosphere, where the fish is very happy there. So it's a matter of being rightly situated in one's proper place. So because this material world is not our real home, it's not our real place, our real place is in the spiritual world of Krishna. That is where we can be happy. So in this verse, it says that we are struggling with the senses very hard, and those senses include the mind. So the mind is a very interesting thing. It's not that difficult with one with a little intelligence and discrimination to understand you're not your body. In fact, many people find, yeah, it's kind of a relief that I'm not this body, especially as you get to be my age. You know, you think, yeah, that's not so bad, not being this body. But what about the mind? That's more difficult, isn't it? We identify with the mind. We think that everything that we see and feel and believe, that this is me. But even that, we have to be very careful and try to have discrimination and understand what is the nature of the soul and what is the mind and intelligence, which are subtle material elements. So the mind is considered the sixth sense. It's the repository of sensory input. Everything that our other five senses are experiencing goes to the mind. The mind evaluates that, and then it creates desire. Yes, I like this, I don't like that. You know, I want this, I don't want that. So the mind is, Prabhupada says, accepting and rejecting all the time. What is good, what is not good, what is enjoyable, what's not enjoyable. That's what the mind does. So we have to be careful, not just because we often think that our thoughts are who we are, and what my mind wants at the moment is what is in the best interest of myself. And who I am is the soul within that body, with, you know, who also is dealing with this mind. So we can also understand that we often say, I think this or I feel this. So the question, of course, is who is the I? If I feel or I think a certain way, that indicates that there is another entity that is doing the thinking or the feeling. And of course, that is the soul. So this says that above the mind is intelligence, and above the intelligence is the spirit soul. So the spirit soul should be actually in charge. Right now, the soul is not so much in charge. The soul is listening to the mind and even to the materially contaminated intelligence. But proper use of intelligence, and Prabhupada said intelligence means the ability to discriminate between spirit and matter. So the proper use of the educated intelligence leads us to somewhat ignore the dictations of the mind and listen to our higher nature, the higher consciousness of the soul, and understand what's really in our best interests. So our best interest, of course, is to try to establish our relationship with Krishna, with God, to enjoy a life of loving devotional service with God. Now, there's another important point that Prabhupada makes in his purport, which has to do with that relationship with Krishna that we are developing. There's actually two aspects to our relationship with Krishna, because the absolute truth includes both that we are equal, our equality, and our separateness from God. We are both separate, and we are both one with God. Chinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. So, where we are one is that our purpose should not be separate. Our purpose should be in alignment with Krishna's, with God and Guru. That should be our purpose, should be in alignment. But we are eternally separate living entities. We do not become one with God or one with the Guru or one with everything at the time of liberation. As we were talking about early, that eternal separation is there. Because each of us has a unique relationship with Krishna, and we each have free will. So this concept of free will is a very, very important part of understanding this philosophy and understanding the truth of our existence. The desire for independence is natural because Krishna is the Swarat, who is the complete independent. We, as part and parcels, having similar qualities in small degree as Krishna, we also have minute independence or free will. So how do we reconcile the fact that we have some independence, but we are completely dependent upon Krishna at the same time? The jiva soul is tatastha shakti, marginal potency. So we are free to act. We, through our desire, make choices. The desire is always there as part of us. We're not robots. We are not even one who is the most surrendered soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not a robot, is not without free will. That small free will is always there. But because we are tatastha or marginal, we have a tendency to misuse that independence. And going back to the purport that we read today, Prabhupada explained this very, very nicely. I'll read it again. He says, every living entity as an individual soul has his personal individuality and a minute form of independence. By misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul, and by proper use of independence, he is always liberated. In this liberated state, he's freed from the material condition on the engagement of the transcendental service of the Lord. In his conditioned life, he's dominated by the modes of material nature and forgets his transcendental loving service to the Lord. And as a result, he has to struggle very hard in this material world. So this is somewhat of an irony, that when one surrenders to the personality of Godhead, in other words, when one uses one's free will to surrender, to give up the idea of independence, one becomes liberated. But when we struggle to remain independent, we are conditioned and controlled by the material energy. So often when we are talking to people, and even people who have some interest in spiritual life, we see that one of the sort of snags or difficulties people have in sort of accepting this philosophy or coming to Krishna consciousness is they don't really want to surrender the idea of independence. They want to make their own choices. They want to be their own person. They don't want to just give it all up and surrender to God. Well, first of all, that doesn't work very well for us. Secondly, we don't have a lot of choice because it's our eternal position. But also, it really is counterproductive because we actually receive the opposite result of what we want. When one does not surrender to God and one struggles in this material world, you simply become conditioned by the modes of nature. You become controlled by the material energy. And one who says, okay, I give this up. Krishna, God, I surrender to you. Then one is in what is called a liberated stage. Because one is no longer under the control of the material modes of nature, but one becomes under the control of the internal potency or the spiritual energy of the Lord. So what's the difference between one control and the other? The spiritual energy is our true position. It's who we are, and therefore we become happy. We are completely fulfilled in our destiny and our purpose of life and actually acting in our true constitutional position. And therefore, everything is fulfilled for the living entity. Now, does that mean that once one surrenders to God, that's it? There's no more independence? No, the independence is always there. You can do what you want. You could theoretically, well, in fact, we did. We did leave Krishna at one point, and we came to this material world. So that free will was there, and we exercised it. And even upon return, it says that one, in the Bhagavad Gita, assures us that one coming, returning to the spiritual world will never come back to this material world again. So that assurance is there. You're not going to be forced to. But Prabhupada has explained, theoretically, if one desired, you could. That free will is there, and that free will must be there, or there's absolutely no question of love. Without free will, there can't be love. And Krishna's desire is to be in a loving relationship with every one of us. So we have to have that free will to accept or reject. Otherwise, it's not love. So that's there. So that's part of Krishna's wonderful plan for the living entities. And he gives us that opportunity to come back to him through love, not through force, not through fear, but through a loving relationship. And then we become actually free. We experience the real freedom, the freedom from suffering, this material world, freedom from birth and death, freedom from ignorance of not knowing the truth, the freedom from being disconnected, alienated, freedom from being alone in this world without relationship, because ultimately we establish the most important relationship, our relationship with God, God who is there within the heart, God who is there everywhere. We reestablish that relationship, and that is real freedom. We become free from material desires. We become free from the modes of nature. So, devotee experiences freedom to engage in loving relationships with Krishna. And also with Krishna's devotees. Also remember that bhakti, or devotion, doesn't just mean me and Krishna. It means Krishna and all of Krishna's part and parcels, all of Krishna's devotees, all of Krishna's eternal associates. And we serve the devotees of Krishna as well as Krishna. And in fact, in the beginning, because we don't really experience Krishna so much directly, it's recommended that we first serve the devotees of Krishna, and particularly the guru. And that all those relationships are based upon bhakti and love. And love is not a theoretical sort of something that is just out there, oh yes, I love everybody, you know. It's easy to say that, but what does it mean? Love actually means service. Bhakti means devotional service. So devotion, love must be there, but also service, action. It's a very active principle. One of my favorite non-scriptural quotes, I guess you could say, or at least not our scriptures. It's a very nice little slogan by Khalil Gibran in The Prophet. He said, "Work is love made visible." So that's the principle of bhakti. Work is love made visible. Our love for Krishna, our love for his devotees, is made visible by work or service, by our devotional service. And through that service, we connect in relationship. So following the process of bhakti, a devotional service to the Lord and his devotees, we reunite with Krishna and Krishna's devotees. We reunite with Krishna's family. And we understand who we are. Eternally, our Sanatan Dharma. And although we are the fragmental part and parcel of Krishna, we are that fragmental part is now connecting again with the whole. And we, as fragmental parts, when we connect with that whole, with the whole of Krishna, then we experience the greatest happiness, the greatest understanding, and eternal life. So thank you very much. We'll end at that point. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. There may be time for a comment or question or thought. Anybody has one? Yes, Prabhu, in the back. We'll get the microphone back.
You said earlier that there were beings in the sun and in the Antarctic ice. Is that looked at from like an interdimensional perspective in, I guess, the materialistic math sense? I mean to see, because I can't comprehend that with my materialistic mindset, that I have. I've read other spiritualists that say that if you cut off the senses, like the five senses that we have, that there's a world all around us that you can't even see. I thought about that when you said...
Yeah, this was actually not quite such a mystical type of thing, but actually something fairly concrete. And the point I was trying to make is when the scriptures tell us that they're living beings everywhere, they're in the sun, they're in the, all these different planets everywhere, that's actually more or less confirmed by material science. Because they've also found that there are living entities in these incredible places like the bottom of the ocean or in Antarctica and like that. So that was a simple point, just that the living entities are found everywhere in this universe. And of course, you know, I guess to take your point a little further, there are also living entities on the subtle plane. You know, these are, there's sort of the gross elements, and there's the three subtle elements of mind, intelligence, and ego, and there are those living entities that have those type of bodies as well. And some of the higher planets, they're actually in subtle bodies, not so much in the gross bodies that we see and experience. So yeah, there's so much variety is there. Okay, thank you. Let's go back up to the front here.
You know, in Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna mentions that he spoke this Bhagavad Gita before on the sun planet,
yeah,
Arjuna has a doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
But his doubt isn't whether there's a sun god.
No. Because he's older, about the age.
Apparently, the sun god's older than Krishna
in
his manifestation on Earth. I think that says a lot to just our conditioning, our schooling, and the kind of assumptions which we bring to Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
For us, the big question is, a sun god? What? Living entities in fire? Huh? So I think there's a lot more for us to undo before we can really comprehend the Vedas like Arjuna.
Yeah, of course, Arjuna and his brothers all were products of demigods, like the fire god and sun god, and like Karna was from the sun. So they were very familiar with these things.
It's like we got to unlearn before we can learn.
Yeah, we have a lot of conditioning. We have a lot of different concepts, and sometimes it's difficult for us to understand these, you know, things that seem very complex or very different from what we normally read in our education. Yeah. Although it is interesting, often the more that you get into these things, you find that they're not so fantastic. It actually begins to make a lot of sense, and particularly you see things that, like this, they say, well, that's not so hard to believe that living entities are found in all
of
this.
A lot of what's presented as fact is just a theory.
Oh, of course. Which changes all the time, every generation. Yeah, probably what I read, you know, in when I went to school, you know, a few centuries ago, is totally changed now. It is. I mean, I know that there's some major theories that are completely different, you know. Yeah. Yes?
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. It's a comment. When you were talking about the illusion, the illusory nature of this world, it looks like pleasurable, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, in a purport, Srila Prabhupada says that the feeling of pleasure that occurs when the senses contact their objects is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? It's just exactly opposite of what we think.
Yeah. Of course, it's also mentioned that the mind is the greatest enemy and the greatest friend, so it all depends upon how we utilize everything, right? You know. If everything is used in the service of Krishna, then it can become our friend. But otherwise, yes, it's an enemy. Yes.
Thank you so much for the wonderful class, Prabhu. It's very inspiring. Prabhu, when we say these words, free will and independence, when we say free will, the living entity has free will, it looks really big. But when we say about independence, we say minute form of independence.
Hmm.
And Prabhupada mentions here that when the independence... When by the misuse of independence, the living entity, he becomes a conditioned soul. Proper use of independence is liberated. So this looks like 50-50. If you do this, you end up as conditioned soul.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do this, you end up as liberated.
Right.
But when we say it, we just use the word minute form of independence. Is there any significance of this word usage, Prabhu?
Only in that... When we say we have free will or independence, it's not unlimited. We can't do anything we want. You know, I can't create universes, you know, or so many things that God can do. God has complete independence, and he can do fantastic things. He can do anything. He can create. We can't do those things. So we have a limited independence. Our main independence that we have, our main free will, is manifested in the choices we make and how we desire. And Prabhupada explained that the real choice a living entity makes is to surrender to the internal potency or the external potency of the Lord. You know, we are either under the sway of yoga maya, or not under the sway, we are under yoga maya, protected by the internal potency of the Lord, or we are under the conditioned nature of mahamaya, the material energy. So in that sense, it's limited choice, limited amount of independence. But yet, very, very important, very critical to determine, you know, our whole sort of lifetimes of existence. Yeah. Question. Okay. Anything else? Yes. On the lady's side.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the lecture. Recently I heard in the lecture of Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj when he was differentiating the types of Veda of the difference. And he was saying, if I'm not mistaken, Swagata Veda, Vijatiya Veda, and Sajatiya Veda. And he said that Madhavacharya, he said that there is a difference with Krishna. He said that he has Vijatiya Veda, but he doesn't have Sajatiya Veda and Swagata Veda, which means like, Swagata Veda is like, he gave an example of a chair. It has four legs, mm-hmm. but they are different. And Sajatiya Veda, if I'm not mistaken, he said we have different chairs, inside the type. And Vijatiya Veda, that we have chair and we have also table and so on. So in this example, he was speaking about Krishna, and I didn't understand when he was telling, when Madhavacharya, he said, he doesn't have Sajatiya and Swagata Veda, but he has Vijatiya Veda, which is difference between his avatars. But he said, for us, in ISKCON, it's better to think that there is no difference, there is a difference between avatars. So could you please explain that? Because it's not clear.
Oh, boy. I don't know whether I can any more than you have. I'm not as familiar with the chairs and that example, but are you talking about this or the idea of Madhvacharya with more differentiated and undifferentiated monism, and the idea being the idea of difference, which is somewhat different than Lord Chaitanya's position of Achintabheda Vetapa? I think that's what you're talking. Okay, I wasn't quite sure. Well, the previous sampradayas all led to the culmination of the absolute truth that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave Achintabheda Vetatva. And so Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, and Vishnu Swami all contributed different aspects to the understanding of how Krishna and the living entity in that relationship, right? And so it became more and more subtle, or more elaborated through history. And so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the best of all of those different different Vaishnav philosophies, which are very similar, but they describe either, you know, that the living entity and God are different, or they're somewhat different, or they're, you know, typically differentiated, and therefore Lord Chaitanya says they're both. He says they're simultaneously, we are one and different than, you know, than the Lord. And of course that's the deepest understanding that we have of the relationship between God and the living entities. Am I getting close to what you're you can say more about it if you want, I think you I'm sorry, I probably don't know enough about the example. Okay. Let's take prasadam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Adi Bhava.